Hello, welcome to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. This is Carol Bruyer. Today is Monday, August 18th, and it's the second hour of Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. We were hoping to have Rosa Clemente on the first hour and Cynthia McKinney on the second hour, but due to the fact that human beings have to sleep at night and Cynthia has to get up really early in the morning, she was not able to join us. So we're Kyle Hentz is joining us again for the second hour, and Kyle worked closely with Cynthia before, and we just were discussing the films that he's in the process of making and that we're in the process of showing at the fourth annual 9/11 Film Festival in Oakland on September 11th from noon till 11 p.m. And I didn't hear the music, so I hope this is working. Kyle, can you hear me?
Yes. Hi.
Okay. Great. So, I was mentioning we are showing a film called 9/11 False Flag, and there is a new book out about it, and it does have some interesting things in it, really damning stuff about the Saudi involvement in 9/11, and it was written by an airline pilot. And actually, I called up Peter Dale Scott after I finished reading the book, and I said, "Hey, Peter, what do you think about this book and these things this guy says?" And I have a lot of respect for Peter Dale Scott and his book, The Road to 9/11, and he's actually going to be one of the featured speakers at our film festival, him and Dan Hamburg, who was also a congressman, a freshman congressman with Cynthia back in 1992. And Peter Dale Scott cautioned me. He said, "Well, when we were investigating the Kennedy assassination, sometimes people would come with information which sounded good or sounded like they were, but it would just muddy the waters, and it wasn't good." And he was very, very suspicious of a lot of the allegations and things that I described to him that I read in this book. And that's where, I think we know they're lying, we know there's a cover-up, but finding out the truth about what happened on 9/11 is a huge challenge, I think, for all of us. What are the right questions to ask? How far do we go to find out who was responsible and who the patsies are and who the fall guys are?
And who financed it and how it was pulled off and everything else.
Exactly.
It's a big task. It's a huge task.
We've got a lot
of the pieces. We have lots of the trails to follow. I think if we're ever going to know the whole story, it's going to be a result of a lot of those pieces obviously coming together in some kind of forum, some kind of commission, some kind of investigation that is well-funded, professionally run, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, that's I hope we see that day. I pray and that we see that day and not in the not-so-distant future. And perhaps the 9/11 commission in New York, the ballot, you know, initiative, that could lead to a commission. Maybe that's it. You know, I hope that we reach that goal. And you know, if you know anyone in New York out there, listeners, you know, send them to the website to New York. Was it NYC 9/11 Ballot Initiative?
It's NYC 9/11 Initiative.org. That's the website.
Yeah.
And it is true, and I think we do need. I think one of the points that Peter Dale Scott made in his book, The Road to 9/11, was that by critically analyzing the 9/11 report and seeing where the gross omissions and distortions are, that's where we need to probe. Like the way they left out Mineta's testimony and the whereabouts of Cheney during that critical hour. There's a lot of clues that this is where they're covering things up. This is what we should ask questions about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's the exclusive things. I do think
it's a good place to start.
It's a good place to start. And I think what was interesting with this book, False Flag 9/11, was the man who wrote it did have a lot of experience as a pilot. He said he knew a lot of the pilots on the planes. He knew the crews. He had flown with them. He has experience with the airplanes. And
what's his name?
His name is Philip Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, there's a lot of questions about what actually happened on those planes. And also what happened with the buildings. I know the NIST report is supposed to, it has been delayed for so long. It's finally going to come out next Thursday. And I'm sure that the scientists and the architects and the engineers for 9/11 Truth are really interested to see what NIST has to say. And we have some really great, wonderful scientists challenging NIST. And I think there's some good, honest people in NIST, but there's also people who have a lot of experience with thermite and explosives who did not look for thermite or explosives and who ignored vast amount of evidence. And what is I think difficult for the public is when you have experts who are pilots or who are air traffic controllers come up with completely different theories that cancel one another out, then the public doesn't really know what to think. And I think they might be in a sort of a panic, let us confuse the waters as much as possible about 9/11 mode right now, because so many people are questioning and wondering what the truth is. And there are so many websites out there now that I think it's a lot of very difficult for the average person who just Googles 9/11 to know, is this good information, misinformation, disinformation, to make us look good, bad, you know,
The word that comes to mind is a morass of competing, conflicting theories and speculation. Of course, you have to theorize and speculate if you're going to sort of take a set of facts and then try to match it up to sort of a storyline or a narrative or a theory or, you know, a speculation that something happened. And then you sort of have to see whether it's borne out, you know, whether the facts bear them out or whether facts contradict them as, you know, as you uncover them. So it is a morass of theories. It's hard to sort through them all. But I think beginning with the, you know, a strong critique of the report itself is a good a place to start as any. And
their response or their lack of response to the questions raised by the family. I mean, they didn't answer 85% of the family's questions.
Like 70 or 75%.
Okay.
Yeah. That's in our film, so that's something I know backwards and forwards. But in one point, I think Lori Van Auken, who is one of the Jersey girls who we interview for in 9/11 Press for Truth, you know, does say 75. I think in another place she says 70. So anyway, we cataloged, I think, over 400 questions, and this was an initiative of David Kubiak's, and we basically lobbied Lori and Mindy Kleinberg and Lori Van Auken to review the whole 9/11 report, and they got through most of it. It wasn't an exhaustive thing. They didn't have a staff and a budget or whatever, but you know, I think they did an excellent job, and then we got some help laying it out graphically, and it was actually part of our submission to Elliot Spitzer when he was Attorney General in New York, that whole report that Lori and Mindy did. And Lori and Mindy also spoke, speaking of Cynthia McKinney, they were invited by Representative McKinney when she was in the House of Representatives to speak at the all-day briefings that were held, I think, on July 22nd of 2000. And was that 6 or 5?
I think it was 2005.
Yeah. And so that was one of the first times that, you know, after the end of the commission, that the widows came out publicly, and basically Lori did an excellent job cataloging her major questions, some of the things that the family members as a group, they were, you know, Mindy, Lori, Patty Kazaza, and Kristen Bob. Breitweiser were the four Jersey girls, and they were also members of the 9/11 Family Steering Committee, which is the official group that liaised with the 9/11 Commission. And it was their first sort of coming out and going on the record after the commission released its final report. And that was something Cynthia did. It was very brave. We got C-SPAN coverage, and Paul Thompson was there, and I think Nafis Ahmed came over from London.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And there were a lot of people. There was a great presenter there. I can't remember his name, on the whole wire transfers that are alleged to have originated in Pakistan, approved by the Mahmoud Ahmed, the general who was deposed right after 9/11, taken out of his position. There was a lot of good presentations there, and Cynthia was the first to go out on a limb and raise questions about where was Bush, and you know, what did he know and when did he know it, that sort of stuff that got her in a lot of hot water. But she was out there.
Yeah,
she was a brave one. She is a brave one.
We do have a caller. We did have a caller. I tried to click him on and I lost him.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Can I tell a story?
Sure.
This is Cynthia McKinney's story. I was living in Newport, Rhode Island at the time, and I don't even know if I knew this was happening, but there was a hearing going on, and she had won her re-election. So she was back in Congress, but she lost her seniority, and which meant that on the Armed Services Committee, which she had been one of the most senior Democrats, she was now sitting down on the very, you know, very first floor, because there's several layers, you know, there's like 30 members of the committee, and she lost her seniority, and they were asking questions of Rumsfeld, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, and Myers, General Myers, the head of the Joint Chiefs. And she, I got a call out of the blue. I'm in Newport walking around with some friends of mine. And she called me to ask me about the war games, because she had just stepped out of the room to prep to make sure that she had her questions right that day. And I know she made a couple of other calls. And so I cataloged the war games. I got back to her, and she, on C-SPAN, and this is actually, I think, on YouTube now, she asked Rumsfeld about, and Myers, about these war games and whether or not, you know, how it affected the response of NORAD that
right.
day. And it was quite a moment, because she's on the same level as Rumsfeld, and he looked like a lost puppy dog. He looked like a lost boy. He just was like, I'd never seen him look like that.
Yeah.
He looked like he had his tail between his legs, you know, kind of thing. And it was really stunning. It was really
yeah.
stunning.
I got to ask Richard Clark about who was in charge that day, too. That was an interesting... I wish I had had it on film. But we actually have John Bursell calling us from Australia, too. And I think he could give us an update on what's happening there. Hi, John.
Hi, Carol. How are you going?
Okay, except we didn't get Cynthia because she had to sleep, because she has to get up early in the morning. But we have Kyle Hentz with us.
Yeah, and I've been listening. It's very interesting. Yeah, no, that's it's a shame about Cynthia. Obviously, I wanted to ask her a question about if they could possibly reach out to the Australian Greens and help them along with the campaign for truth and justice that Cynthia is running on in the States, which I, you know, the people power type idea, I think, is great, and especially the way that she's asking for all the records to be brought forward from the assassinations and also for 9/11. I'm very impressed with that, and that's been something that I've been using as a wedge to get into the argument with the Greens in Australia.
And you're organizing some big events too for September 11th, yes? You want to?
We do. We have what's called three events. We've called them a Fearless Trilogy, and the reason we've called it that is obviously the main drive for the you know, the people that are in power is to keep us in fear. So the idea is we're trying to break through the fear by three events. The first event on September 11 at 7 p.m. at the Tom Mann Theatre in Surry Hills in the heart of Sydney is a public meeting. And the reason that we've decided to have a public meeting is we were challenged by the Stop the War Coalition, which is one of our major peace groups in the Sydney area and around Australia. The idea was to basically have a public meeting so that they could attend and ask us questions, because we've attended. We've attended. Sorry, that's my little daughter. She wants that attention. Anyway, I'll just see if I can keep her out. Yeah, and the main idea was to provide a platform for the peace movement to attend our a meeting with us for free and be able to ask us questions if they desire. Whether that happens or not, we're not certain. The second event we're having is on September 12th at the same venue at 7 p.m, which will be the first full viewing of Shadow Play by Gillian Norman, which is going to be a very powerful movie once we finally see it. And the third event is on September 13th on the Saturday night, which is just basically a fundraiser and a chance for the people that have come from out of town to have a drink together and meet other activists.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad you're going strong in Australia, although I must admit you kind of wiped out my supply of deception dollars in 9/11 fact sheets.
Well, that's great. I'll leave it at that. I'll let you guys get back to your discussion. I can hear the break music, and I'll get back to playing with my 3-year-old.
Okay. Thanks for the update, John. And
thanks
good
for
luck
calling,
to you.
John. Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Uncover the Truth with Catherine Albrecht, live from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Monday to Friday, right here on We the People Radio Network.
Well, hello, George. Yeah, the framers of our Constitution, fresh on the hill.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. I'm Carol Bruyer, speaking with Kyle Hentz, and let's talk about, okay, when Cynthia was grilling Rumsfeld on the war games, she also brought up some other issues about special events, and let's talk about this situation we're in where we don't know who's in charge and who's doing what. With regards to war games and who's in authority? Do you want to explain more?
Well, yeah, this
more
is sort of
that?
Part two. This is sort of part two of my my story about getting the call from Cynthia McKinney the day that she was having one of the first hearings with Rumsfeld and Myers after 9/11, where she first asked a question about what war games were going on that day and whether or not it made them more prepared or not. And their response was that it made them more prepared for what happened, which, of course, is absurd on its face. But after that question was asked and not answered, she posed a question to another witness who was on the panel, Tina Jonas. And Tina Jonas had taken over the role of comptroller of the Department of Defense from Dov Zakheim. During Dov Zakheim's tenure or his position as comptroller is responsible for all the money, okay, in the organization, in this case the defense, the Department of Defense. And during his time as comptroller, there are different figures put forth, but trillions of dollars literally is not properly accounted for. It went missing. It's like at the end of the year, they've basically got to cook their books to sort of paper over this. In other words, there's no paper trail for trillions of dollars during the period up to 2000. And so Cynthia had educated herself about this issue. And she basically said, Ms. Jonas, can you talk about the accounting systems at the Department of Defense? And Tina Jonas, the comptroller, would not name any of the contractors, the accounting contractors. Everything's being privatized, as we know, the entire government, mm-hmm. the military, the intelligence, and accounting is being privatized, meaning, you know, private companies are hired by the government for different roles, and apparently there were a number of them, computerized systems, what have you, And the Pentagon is required to do an audited financial statement, but they have never done one. And they have used the excuse of 9/11 and people. They did lose people in the accounting division or accounting department and that wedge of the Pentagon that morning. But they used that as an excuse for years running. I mean, 2 or 3 years later, they were still using that excuse. 2 years anyway, and the comptroller, Tina Jonas, refused to answer the question which contractors were responsible for the accounting. So it's just another case where Representative McKinney, where Cynthia McKinney is out front on an issue, confronting people, trying to hold them to account. And, you know, the fact that she's running and hopefully going to enter this debate, I wish she would be, you know, could share the same floor with the Republican and the Democratic candidates, because the country needs to hear what she has to say, in my view.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. Actually, I did get an email from somebody today proposing that they have an alternative debate. It's supposed to happen on September 18th in New Orleans. And so they're thinking of inviting the Democrat and the Republican candidate and have all the candidates in a forum which can be broadcast on YouTube and the Internet. So I think there will be some sort of alternative debate, because they probably will get closed out of the regular debates. But I think that would be really good. I know my husband, he works at Google, and Google has had every presidential candidate speak there, and then they show, you know, the speech up on YouTube. And I want to make sure that Google has Cynthia. They've had Ralph Nader. They've had Ron Paul. But I think everyone should have the opportunity to hear her voice and the issues that she raises. I just wish, yeah, more people could figure out how to use the Internet and had access to it, because I'm sure that some people get overdosed with information, and yet probably the vast majority of people still aren't seeking answers or looking at all the questions yet. But I think things are changing more and more as this comes out. People are doubting the regular press and trying to find alternative voices.
Sure.
I also wanted to mention that I did have a chance to question Richard Clark about who was in charge of the multiple exercises that were taking place on September 11th. And he acted ignorant about that. He said he was in charge, and he did not acknowledge that there were multiple exercises taking place that day. He feigned ignorance. And I did last Wednesday have the opportunity to ask Nancy Pelosi if she thought the articles of impeachment presented by Kucinich were crimes. And she was evasive and muttered something to the effect that she hadn't read them. And I think this another person who was badgering her on her book tour came across the same thing. I mean, willful ignorance. I do not even want to think about these things or look at the crimes that this
government... Well, I think she's fully aware of them, to be honest. And I think it's just a politically expedient thing, or she's got some skeletons in her closet or her family's closet.
I think
you know,
she has,
I mean,
lots of skeletons.
I can't believe that she is... I can't believe that she is ignorant of the fact that crimes have been committed and impeachable offenses have, you know, happened, you know, under Bush's watch and been, you know, done by Bush and during his presidency. I can't believe that. No, I really can't.
Well, I think what has happened, though, is I've been part of the National Impeachment Coalition, and there's some things they might look at because Congress wasn't involved. But there's a lot of the crimes that the administration has committed in collusion with Congress. And those they don't really want to talk about. The ones where they signed off, they aided. I mean, Pelosi was in. She knew about the torture. There are a lot of things which make...
Well, she was one of the Gang of Eight, right? She was a leading member of the Intelligence Committee in the House. So, yeah.
Right.
She's guilty, too. So that's a problem. She's got a conflict of interest, doesn't she?
Right. Yeah. So and we did, Shirley Golub, did the impeachment of George Bush, the play in San Francisco. I think it was shown in Washington, D.C. Almost a year ago. But basically in it, the guy who plays Bush speaks directly to the Senate. He says, you know, if you convict me, you're convicting yourself because you've gone along aiding and abetting me this whole time. And I think this is one of the reasons we see Congress acting so ignorant, because they just don't want to acknowledge that they haven't done their job. They haven't exercised oversight or prevented the executive branch from trashing our Constitution and doing all these illegal things. We do have a caller from Oregon, I believe. Hello? Did you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I think we are going to go to the break. Can I speak to you after break?
Yes, I'm sorry. You're paying more attention to the clock than I am. Or maybe you could hear the music, because I can't.
Tell him to go ahead. I don't think the music is on yet. Oh, yes, it is. There it is.
There it goes.
Yeah.
And that's how it works.
Thank you.
Oh, we still have half an hour. Do you want to say what your question is about?
My question is regarding the elections.
Okay.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
The call is out across the land, the impeachment of Bush. For crimes and lies, you'd like to see him kicked out on his push. Friends, you've got good reason. I support you absolutely.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. We missed the punchline of that great song, but the song is Impeach Cheney First. And I think a lot of people like me think it's not a bad idea. So we have Mo calling from Oregon. And Mo, do you want to articulate your question now that we can hear you?
Oh, yes. I appreciate you giving me the time and great shows. As like before, you have a great host. Always, Carol, and thank you very much to your present host, too. Everything he said is very, very approving and very, very eyes-opening, always. My question is, you know, we have Obama one side, we have McCain in other side, and both of them are work for globalists, as we know. Both of them wants war with Iran. Both of them wants to go bomb 100 countries to come in near future. So what do you advise us? I think boycott election is the only answer to this bastard. What do you think of that?
Well, I would disagree, and I'm actually running for Congress, so that's my own personal bias. But I do think that Cynthia had a lot to say. She's in a film called American Blackout, but she mentions that if people hadn't mobilized in Florida in 2000, we probably wouldn't have known that they had stolen the election in Florida. And I think more people are aware that they stole the election in 2004. But it does take a tremendous awareness and a mobilization to get people to participate in the electoral process, to hold, to have honest elections. Right now, they're getting, I would say, stolen wholesale, retail, every which way you can. And we have the problem, as you say, of candidates. It doesn't really matter if it's Democrat or Republican. They're pro-corporate, pro-war. But we need to have some control over the process to get some candidates who will represent people and challenge the lies and challenge the blatant criminality. How about you, Kyle? What do you think?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that over half the population, election after election, is already boycotting by not voting. And look at where that's got us. So, I mean, one of the things that I think is really encouraging to me relative to what's happening right now on the political front is the response of young people across the country to Senator Obama's campaign. I mean, there is just I don't think we've seen this kind of surge, explosion in interest by young people at colleges and getting involved, getting political. You know, I think maybe not since, the early 70s, late 60s. And that to me is really encouraging. So my response is no, I think we need a lot more involvement, especially young people. Mobilize and, you know, the progressive voices in the country need to realize how big and strong we are, because that's what's missing. I don't think that on the whole, those of us who are against the war, we're in the majority. Those of us who are against torture, we're in the majority. Those of us who want the restoration of habeas corpus, we're in the majority by far. And right. And yet we act as if we're, you know, oftentimes impotent, or, you know, that it's not going to make a difference what we do. And it certainly is. And if we come out this, you know, in November, well, we can maybe switch, you know, control to the other party. But we have to do a lot more than that. We have to elect you, for example, and a lot of other progressive candidates that are truly going to vote to stop the war and not roll over or let the Republicans roll over them on issues.
I have another question. Do you think that we will have election or we don't have election? If they attack Iran and then or they do other things that right now, you know, that part of the Arkansas are under martial law right now as we speak. Helena and some other part of Arkansas are under martial law right now. So this is the first stages, and second stages, and third, and then the whole country will go under martial law. Do you think that we will have election, yes or no? And if not, why not? If yes, why?
I hope we have elections, but if they do stage another attack, then I think they can certainly cancel elections. As you might recall, September 11th, 2001, they were having elections in New York City, and those elections were canceled that day. At least they were postponed. Kyle, do you want to respond to that too?
Well, I think it all depends on how we individually, how we as Americans or Canadians, how the world responds to the events as they unfold. I mean, I think we're at the precipice, if not already, you know, slipping down the slippery slope, you know, to, you know, a full-scale police state. I mean, there are dangerous signs out there, things that are happening to innocent people, things, you know, people who get locked up for wearing a T-shirt, or people who are detained for hours at an airport for just having traveled to Syria on a simple vacation. I mean, things like that are happening left, right, and center. In fact, those things are happening more and more. So, you know, on the one hand, you know, there is cause for being really concerned. We should be very concerned. We need to be vigilant. But on the other, I just think that we have to take heart that our power and our influence, our use of the media, our awareness is growing all the time, and that we can't submit to fear. We can't, you know, let fear guide our response. Because if fear and paranoia win the day, then certainly we're going to be, you know, we're going to slide off the precipice. We're going to feed into the fear-mongering that's going on. And I think the sort of dark scenario that the caller raises is more likely to happen. So I would caution against sort of, slipping into that kind of thinking. But I would also say we have to act on what we know. We can't sit back and think it's just going to change. And if we all act in concert, we all act in the, however we see fit, I certainly think we can avoid, you know, the kind of dark scenario that the caller brings up, you know, in terms of martial law. Obviously, the government's acting as if the Constitution has already been suspended. We could spend hours talking about all of that, but that's my sense of where we're at. Any number of things could trigger martial law, but it all depends on how we respond to events in the world, how we respond to what our leaders do or choose to do.
Right, and if we don't exercise our free speech rights, we certainly will lose them. We also have another caller, Glenn from Oregon. Did you have a question or a comment? And
it's a question. There were a lot of people in Portland looking forward to hearing Cynthia McKinney again, but no one begrudges her a good night's sleep. The question is, I understand that if the Green Party gets 5% of the presidential vote, that they will get federal funds in the next presidential election. Is that true?
Yes, and there are several states where Cynthia's very, very close to getting, like in Arizona, she just needs $300 to get over the $5,000 mark. And if this happens in 8 states, she will qualify. She'll get $100,000, and that will allow her to finance a hip-hop tour for young people throughout the country to get out her message, which I think
that's
is really
for this
vital.
Year's election, then.
Pardon?
That's even for this year's election, then.
Yes, for this year, and I'm sure it will help in the future. And her goal is really to get 5% of the vote, and that is actually a huge thing to get 5% of the vote, because then the Green Party would be have easier ballot access and better funding in the next election cycle. But this is a struggle, building a third party. The Democrats and the Republicans are terrified of, you know, real competition from the
I hear the music starting.
Yes.
A question came up last night. 5% of what? The popular vote, electoral vote? This is
yes.
The next election.
No, the popular vote.
And I'll take my answer on the web.
Okay.
Mr. President, I wish to document that you have clearly lost your mind.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. I'm Carol Brugge. That was Tom Chelston singing the theme song from his album Brick. And I'm speaking with Kyle Hans, who is the producer of 9/11 Press for Truth. And Kyle, getting back to 9/11 Press for Truth, that film raises so many issues about executive power and the stranglehold that they really have on Congress these days. Because it really, I would say that commission, Congress gave it the lip service of being bipartisan, but it was really a tool of the White House, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, first off, there was tremendous resistance almost from day one, you know, to investigate what happened on September 11th. You know, so you had the administration basically saying, we're too busy fighting this new so-called war on terror to be able to afford to take some time off and go over and answer your questions, members of Congress. So, you know, we're not going to, you know, they were basically opposed to any investigation. They were opposed to even having hearings, you know, by the different committees. But, you know, basically a number of widows, which we chronicle in the documentary, led by the so-called Jersey Girls, the women who lost their husbands who were in the towers that day, they basically embarrassed members of Congress into investigating, and it took them 444 days, you know, before there was an actual commission. But it was their lobbying, you know, many, many trips down to D.C. that got the commission. And then once it was finally actually passed into law, there were so many compromises and cavings on issues that in the end, the Republicans had control. They made the major appointments. There had to be a majority, I think, for issuing subpoenas. So it meant that the Democrats couldn't just issue subpoenas at will, you know, that they had to have at least one Republican. So that effectively neutered the Democrats, you know, on really going after the evidence and that they needed to look at. And so, you know, from the get-go, it was flawed and conflicted. And so it was a major issue of another case where the executive power is just, you know, run amok and it's too much.
But at the same time, I know I actually got mad at the Family Steering Committee because it seems like in the wake of 9/11 Commission, there were some of the family members who went along with the report's recommendations. And I felt
that's right.
They were so deeply flawed that it was just outrageous that anyone could support their recommendations. And then the first thing the Democratic Congress did was to pass the bogus recommendations of the commission.
It was a very successful PR and spin effort by the people behind the whole thing. In other words, they used the commission to further centralize intelligence gathering and the whole intelligence community, further centralized that by creating another layer of bureaucracy with one head of national intelligence above it all. And there was a split in the family. I mean, it was sort of a backstory that I learned because of my having attended all the hearings and got to know, you know, some of the family members. And so I learned that there was a group that just wanted to focus on the recommendations because, listen, let's not have another fight. We've fought enough. Let's focus on trying to make this country safer. Of course, I don't believe that these recommendations do that. I think they just further the agenda of centralization of control and all of that. And so you basically had one group that vocally came out and said, this is a great report and let's now implement these recommendations. And then a silent, maybe minority, maybe half that knew that the commission had basically ignored them and spit in their face and said, well, you know, the bottom line is they didn't answer most of their questions. And they pretty much stayed silent for a while. And then slowly some of them have come out, and we interviewed them for our documentary, and Lori and Patty and Mindy have come out to a number of events, Monica Gabrielle, et cetera, been very active. Sally Reaganhard, fought against Rudy Giuliani's campaign for the presidency, the Republican nomination. So they've all come out in different ways since. But initially, I was disappointed as well that there was, you know, and not outraged at what they actually had produced. But they spun it very well. They had a very well-oiled PR machine, and of course, you know, the mainstream media, you know, lapping it up.
Yeah, I remember when I was running for Congress in 2006, and I gave a copy of 9/11 Press for Truth to my opponent, Anna Eshoo, and she was saying, oh, the families thought the commission was great, the recommendations were great, there was no problem with the commission report, etc. And she was very close to anything that I said to the contrary. But she also co-sponsored the Intelligence Transformation Act. And, you know, and she wouldn't answer my questions, the questions that I raised about 9/11. She ignored every single question, and then she said, I was at the Pentagon on the day it happened. I saw the plane wreckage, and she just dismissed every other question with her, firsthand witness account of it, which I could hardly challenge.
Well, it's a tough thing to grapple with. I mean, I know when I first started having doubts about, you know, what I was told. I mean, I think I was in a state of shock right when it happened, and I was probably for a few weeks, you know, before I felt uncomfortable with what was sort of going on in the country in response to the, you know, all the flag waving and the sort of talk about giving up certain freedoms for, you know, for security. You know, that made me uncomfortable, but I was in a state of shock. And then slowly, you know, I read the stories about the put options and how, you know, people were making bets that certain stocks would fall, and the put options in American United went up and spiked significantly. And sure enough, it turns out that all these studies have been done and shown that those were truly anomalous and not explained by, you know, the excuses or the explanations given by the commission. But it's a tough thing to grok. It really is. It really is. I wanted to say, let your listeners know that I personally, these leaders have no excuse, at least if they watched it. I personally, you said you gave a copy to Anna Eshoo. I have personally given copies to Senator Clinton. I handed it to her. I've personally given a copy to Senator Obama on two separate occasions. And the second occasion was I was out showing the film in Seattle at a minor independent documentary festival that we had been invited into. And we were showing it out there, and Senator Obama came in for a rally, and then he had a special event for, some of the bigger donors at a nearby hotel. And so I went to the hotel, and I basically walked into the room where he was having the photos taken, and I got to ask him if he'd seen the film that I'd given him in Miami. And he said, yeah, I've seen it, and I think it's good. And, of course, I was sort of herded along. You know, you got all these other people waiting for their picture to be taken with him. And so that was pretty much all I said. I said that there might be hearings, and I mentioned Representative Kucinich and his intention to at the time he was seriously looking at holding hearings about the financial aspects, the put options amongst them. That he wanted to hold hearings.
Do you think that'll happen? Will
follow
through?
I hope so. I certainly hope so. He's made some noises again, and he says he has that he is committed to it. I hope he follows through. That's all I'll say. I hope he follows through soon and holds some hearings, because there's a lot of material that I've uncovered. I'm working on a book, and some of the material that I've uncovered relates to this subject, some of the financial anomalies around 9/11, and certainly the 9/11 profiteering is a very interesting subject. You know, who profited afterwards? So that's what I'm looking at. I know that that's an interest to Representative Kucinich, and so I mentioned that to Senator Obama, and he just sort of took it in, and then I sort of was hurried on. And he's seen it. I also gave him a copy of Nafees Ahmed's book when I first met him at the Miami Book Fair before he had actually declared. And so Senator Obama has a copy. Senator Clinton has a copy. I hope, she's seen it. I gave a copy to Senator Schumer as well. So my hope is that one of the things that we as activists mobilize around is a campaign to get this question asked at town hall meetings and wherever the candidates show up, and we try to get people in the room and get this question of asked. Basically say some of the members of the commission say that their work is not the last word. The families say that 70% of the questions were not answered. Will you support a new investigation into 9/11 and support the families in their call?
Well, we're running out of time now, but I want to thank you so much, Kyle, for all your work and your courage, too, and your stamina. And I wish you the best with your book and with your films. If you're out here on September 11th, join us at the in Oakland when we premiere it. But thank you so much for everything.
Thank you so much,
done.
Carol, for everything you've done. Thank you so much for having me on the show as well.
The Bill of Rights protects every American's God-given right to keep and bear arms. Now that right is being seriously undermined as legally registered rifles are being confiscated in some parts of our country. If we're not careful, we may find ourselves with no right to own guns. And that's where Gun Owners of America comes in. Gun Owners of America is in Washington every day fighting for you to keep that right. Congressman Ron Paul has called GOA the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. You need to be part of this great grassroots group of activists who are keeping the heat on their members of Congress. Find out right now how you can join. Call 888-886-GUNS and get started receiving their fact-filled newsletters and action alerts. Call 888-886-GUNS or go to their webpage at gunowners.org and help make your voice heard in Washington. Make that call right now and call Gun Owners of America at 888-886-GUNS. Remember, it's not just about gun control, it's about control.
Online and on demand, this is We the People Radio Network.